This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Public schools expected statewide directives this week, but Governor Cooper pushed back the big decision yesterday.
We're not issuing a statewide directive today on how schools should open in the fall, but we will soon. We want to get our students back in the classroom, and we want to make sure that we get this right. My number one opening priority is classroom doors.
Districts were told the governor would order one of three plans to be the minimum level of restrictions. More restrictive plans are allowed, but nothing less than the statewide rules. After the planned announcement yesterday was delayed, school districts turned back to the drawing board to plan for each of the three statewide orders. To tell us about some of the ideas emerging from all of this uncertainty, I am joined by Cole Del Charco, WUNC's Fletcher Fellow for Education Policy Reporting. Hey, Cole.
Hi, Anita.
So there are a lot of people super anxious to hear from the governor yesterday. Parents who want to know about going back to work, teachers who want to know what to plan for the fall. So tell me a bit about why the governor decided to put off the announcement. Do we know what he was thinking?
Well, he said in the coronavirus briefing yesterday that it's because he wants to give more time to teachers and parents to respond with their thoughts about how this could all work out. Yesterday was the state's biggest jump in case numbers so far. So I'm sure that's weighing on his mind, as well as just how much everything's changing. We don't really know what the outbreak is going to look like 6 weeks from now, or how bad or improved the situation could be. So that's one thing. But then there's also the increasing political pressure. Republicans in the state general assembly have said they want schools to reopen. Some of them have said, like Lieutenant Governor Dan Boris says, he wants it to reopen without kids having to wear masks. Earlier this week, there was a statement also put out by the American Academy of Pediatrics, urging schools to reopen doors to students, but to do it safely. So I think there's just a lot of pressure on all sides.
So a lot of factors that the governor is weighing right now, and he's really trying to decide between these three specific options for reopening. And these would be the minimum restrictions given to school districts to choose from. They could do something more than this, but this would be the minimum. So outline these three designations and the difference among the three.
So they've called it Plan A, B, and C. And actually, in listening to some school board meetings, some school boards don't like that because it sounds like one's better than another. But under Plan A, all students would be back in school. It would still be social distancing. High school and middle school students would be required to wear masks, as well as all staff. I should also say that under all of these plans, there will be health and screenings and temperature checks before anyone is let into the school. Under Plan B, there would be required only 50% capacity in schools and required 6 feet of social distancing at all times, no matter what. Under Plan C, that would be going back to complete remote learning, which is what we saw, you know, at the end of this school year. But this time they would have a little more time to plan for it.
So I want to break down a couple of the items that you mentioned in each of the plans. You said in Plan A, which would be the least restrictive, PPE and wearing masks would be essential, would be mandatory. So what are the proposed requirements for masks? And would the state provide this equipment to schools, to individual families? What would that look like?
Well, I'm not exactly certain about whether each school is going to be providing masks for students. I've heard in, you know, some conversations, at least among some school boards, that the hope would be that students would be wearing masks when they arrived already. They said they would be able to give masks to students who need them, like if someone's getting on the bus and they don't have a mask, there should hopefully be a mask there for the student to have on. All staff at the schools, all teachers, will be wearing masks. Students in middle and high school would absolutely be wearing masks. There are still kind of conversations going on about what even the CDC is recommending in terms of masks for younger students, especially at the elementary school level. Schools are ages 11 and 12, that's one age that people are saying maybe children under that age wouldn't have to wear a mask. But we're still kind of waiting to learn more about that.
So one of the restricting factors, I mean, as we try to kind of make the rules that we're all being given right now, wear a mask and keep 6 feet of distance, when you think about going back into a school environment, there is only a limited amount of space. So you've been talking to a few different districts about how they would plan to use their existing space to accommodate students. Tell me about what you've heard from Durham and Wake County and how they would enforce this social distance within the existing space that they have.
Right. So Durham Public Schools has talked about having K through 8 grades in school, spreading out their students. They've thought about, you know, having some classes operating in the cafeteria or gym just so they can have more space. And Durham Public Schools has made the recommendation, and they're still waiting, you know, on the governor's order, of course, of potentially having their high school go completely virtual. And yeah, they've also provided a virtual or remote learning option for all grades for anyone who maybe would be higher risk or the family wouldn't be comfortable, you know, having their child in a school environment in person. They've created this virtual Ignite Academy is what they're calling it. In Wake County, they've been looking also at partnerships with local YMCAs, and that would be an opportunity to, you know, maybe have childcare for students who aren't going to classes on specific days or during specific timeframes. And part of the reason for that is they've talked about having a rotating schedule of having some students in school some days of the week or potentially some weeks out of the month, and then rotating that so that way they have almost, you know, kind of like these bubbles that we've been talking about so much with the pandemic. The more you can limit the social network of students, the more you can prevent kind of the spread. And so that's the idea behind that.
So while we're waiting for the governor to say whether it's A, B, or C, there have been a number of districts that have announced if it is B, here is what we would propose. Asheville City Schools is an example. They said under Plan B of the governor's order, we would have half of all pre-K through sixth graders meet in person 1 week, while the other half access live virtual lessons remotely. Every week, the two groups would switch, so doing that rotation like you described, while 7th through 12th graders would be virtual full time. So, I mean, this any kind of virtual plan, any kind of hybrid structure is going to put a lot of pressure on teachers to adapt to this. I mean, what support structures is the state offering for online learning and for teachers to be able to adapt to these changing learning modules?
It absolutely is a lot to put on teachers. You know, that's one thing that a lot of school board members have said is they're just concerned about, you know, putting extra work on teachers without paying them more. But it is the reality of the situation. So the state, the Department of Public Instruction has said that they're providing, and they are currently providing, you know, online seminars to try to help teachers prepare for this. One of the big hopes is just that having more time to prepare for remote learning and having a full summer where you understand that this is a possibility, even if we don't start out in schools with remote learning, that it could happen throughout the year. I think that's one thing that people are hoping will even that much will help teachers be in a better spot than what we saw at the end of the spring this year.
So there are all kinds of questions about, you know, what the government decides based on their best assumptions about the data. Then there's individual parents and families who have to make choices about the health of their kids and their own concerns. I mean, what happens for parents who don't feel like whatever the school district decides is a good fit for their kid? What options do they have?
Well, that's a great question. One of the things people have been thinking about, especially, is childcare. You know, if you're a family with two working parents, you've got young children, and they're supposed to be off to elementary school normally, you know, that's a whole extra burden that a lot of families are feeling right now. You know, I'm not a parent, so I don't understand exactly how that is, but I've seen the stressed out Facebook posts and tweets. And, you know, some public school advocates are a little concerned that this could push some parents who are already thinking about making a switch to private schools. That could be an option that some people consider. Some of them have, you know, more online resources. But one of the things I think that's clear is that teachers are doing a lot of work to try to make sure that their students are in a good place to succeed, that remote learning, you know, can carry on, but they're also hearing from their teachers. And so I think a lot of parents will probably be weighing this decision about, do I send my child back to school in person, or do I see if my district has an opportunity for my kid to learn remotely, and which is better for me with my work, and which is better for them and also their, you know, development as a human.
School districts around the state have been putting a ton of resources into surveying communities and trying to get a sense of what they feel comfortable with. Pender County Schools asked people what reopen strategies they were most interested in to kind of get parents and families invested. Transylvania County Schools sent out a reopening survey and noted that only 20 to 25% of their families were able to get reliable internet. So something huge to keep in mind when they're thinking about moving things online. So as we're looking forward to the next couple of weeks, what are you paying attention to in terms of an announcement, and what are you looking for in terms of school board decisions? We have just about 30 seconds left.
Well, I'm interested to see what the governor does with all of this. There is still the option, and some people have put pressure on him to leave this decision up to school districts themselves. I think it'll be interesting to see if he decides to say, here's the minimum that we're going to do as a state, and then, you know, your district, if you have a flare-up of COVID-19, you can decide to lock down more or even go to remote learning.
So a lot to watch out for. You can follow Cole Del Charco's reporting and find all of it at our website, stateofthings.org. Cole is WUNC's Fletcher Fellow for Education Policy Reporting. Thank you so much, Cole.
You bet.